Chapter 15. Does it ever stop raining? Anakin asks in disgust. Mace, having surrendered his hooded cloak to Fives because of his cracked armor and torn undersuit, is not feeling all that much more charitable towards the weather right now. He grimaces, wiping a hand over his face, and blinks water out of his eyes. But it's only a very temporary fix.
Not yet, he says. I think this is less a storm and more the planet's atmosphere.
Anakin pulls a face, though he mostly looks resigned. The lightning was giving that away, he says, and shoves his dripping hair back with a sigh. I never thought I'd miss a desert. Mace can't argue. He might even take Tatooine over this soggy mudball.
I would even take a break in the clouds.
Nodding unhappily, Anakin lifts a hand to shield his eyes as he squints at the rise of the hill there halfway up. Or a change in scenery. There are too many trees. You two gripe as much as shinies, sirs, Kix says, amused. No offense. Anakin looks at Mace, blinking rain out of his eyes. Mace looks back, sodden and displeased about it. Says the man in full armor, with a helmet, Anakin tells him. Cody, a pace behind him, hums thoughtfully.
They're nice and cozy, too, he says,
which is uncalled for. I'm getting wet, Five says in unhappy protest, waving a dripping arm. It's gross. You still have a helmet and we don't, Anakin retorts. As soon as we're somewhere civilized, I'm going to take a bath for a month. Kix is trying not to laugh, something Mace can sense clearly and disapproves of deeply in addition.
Well, if you want to pay attention to something besides the weather, it looks like someone fulfilled your wish, General Skywalker. Fewer trees, see?
A little startled, Anakin turns to follow his pointing finger, and Mace looks too. Up ahead, there's relatively more light on the road, a break in the trees that they haven't seen since the Sith Temple. The rain is coming down harder, but at least there aren't the interminable drips that have been dropping on them all day, each one feeling like a full upended glass of water. Thank the Force, Anakin mutters, lengthening his stride. He makes it out onto the open ground just as the ground levels out, and then stops dead, right in the middle of the path.
Anakin? Mace asks sharply, and ducks under one last spray of branches to make it onto the crest of the hill.
Beyond the trees, the ground changes, turning rocky and muddy as it tumbles down into a sheer cliff above another valley. There's a waterfall somewhere close, and more light, and beyond the slope, a city lies in ruin.
Criffing hells, Anakin says, staring down at the expanse of broken and crumbling buildings.
It's huge. It is. Mace traces the edges of it, faded out into the distance. The jungle and swamp have reclaimed the edges, so it's hard to even say where it ends. And there's aged green scattered through what must have once been streets. A handful of skyscrapers stand broken and gutted, spilling plants, but others have fallen, crushing sections of the city to be reclaimed by the swamp. Above it all, a building of black stone and dark glass looms, eerily untouched by the decay around it. There are no lights running up the spire, but the symbol carved into the front of it is perfectly clear, even from a great distance.
Master? Anakin asks quietly. Mace takes a breath, releases it, catalogs the burn of alarm, the wash of horror, the threads of disgust, and lets them go.
That symbol, he says, on the citadel. It once meant that the Sith Emperor and his Dark Council were in residence.
Cody's indrawn breath is sharp, alarmed.
How likely is it that they still are? He asks, grip tightening on his blaster. Mace admires the bravery behind the motion, but if the whole of the Dark Council was in residence, a full force of Jedi would likely fail against them. The five of them would be a brief amusement and nothing more.
Not very, he says after a moment.
There's a thread of suspicion growing as to the planet they're on. But Jedi chronicles about the Galactic War tend to skim over the scenery, so it's hard to be sure.
It's been at least 1,000 years since the Sith Empire existed.
I don't think there are any people living down there either, Kix says after a moment. I don't see any lights, and it doesn't look like anyone's tried to rebuild.
There's probably comm equipment, at least, Fives offers, though he's frowning.
Somewhere in the creepy black city that's abandoned and probably haunted.
Anakin pauses, then grimaces.
Do Sith leave Force ghosts? He asks Mace.
Yes, Mace says grimly. They do.
Fantastic, Anakin mutters, and eyes the cliff. I don't think we're going to find anywhere better to scavenge for parts, though. That tower looks mostly intact. There has to be something in there we can use to call for help.
Whatever they find is likely to be a millennia in age, and therefore unfamiliar. But it's certainly better than wandering back into the jungle and looking for help among the trees and Vornskers.
Mace inclines his head, and with a crooked smile, Anakin claps him on the shoulder.
Cheer up, Master Windu, he says. What's the worst that could happen? Ghosts can't hurt us.
Taking several running steps, he flips over the edge of the cliff, tumbling down out of sight.
With an annoyed sigh, Mace follows far more slowly, pausing at the top.
If you haven't been eaten, Skywalker, he calls down, help me get the troopers down.
Sure, Anakin calls up from the bottom, and Mace can see his much smaller figure skirt a wide pool and duck under a crooked tree as he gets to a safe distance.
Get us down? Kix asks warily.
You mean with the Force?
We don't have grappling equipment, Cody points out, glancing over the edge and then sighing.
Who wants to go first?
Kix groans but steps forward.
Medkit on or off? He asks.
On, Mace says, and raises a brow at him. Jedi are capable of levitating a building with enough concentration kicks. Your medkit is hardly a concern.
That, at least, makes Kix relax a little. Right, sorry, sir. Should I do anything?
No.
Mace checks that Anakin is watching, signals to him, and then raises a hand. It's easy to see the shape of Kix in the Force, to concentrate for a bare instant and lift him off his feet. Kix stiffens, but he doesn't otherwise react as Mace carefully lowers him down the sheer cliff until Anakin can catch him and settle him safely on the ground.
Wow, Five says, peering over the edge. That's a long way down. General Skywalker just jumped?
The attack on Rishi Station was recent enough that it makes sense Fives isn't used to the way Jedi do things yet. With a flicker of amusement, Mace raises a brow and says,
Height is no obstacle to a Jedi.
Maybe sometimes it should be,
Cody mutters. When Mace raises a brow at him, though, all he says is, Jedi like to throw themselves off as many high things as they can find. I assume it's a cultural thing.
It's fun,
Mace doesn't say, lest it ruin the carefully cultivated impression that he's never had fun in his life.
Is an expedient way to get to the bottom, he offers instead, and asks Fives, Are you ready?
Yes, sir. Fives straightens and gives him a grin. If I move, will you drop me?
No, Mace says, with an idea of where this is going and quite a lot of amusement.
Even if I move a lot?
Fives,
Cody says suspiciously. Why do you need to move a lot? Mace catches Anakin's wave to signal that he's ready, then reaches out.
You won't be in danger,
he says, and Fives grins, twists, ducks his head, and Cody jerks an aborted step forward as Fives suddenly flips over in the air. Fives, he says, alarmed.
It's fine, Mace says, tolerant,
and Fives laughs as he sails down the cliff face, spinning and tumbling as he goes.
Force, Cody mutters.
It's really not. He's going to give me a heart attack.
ARC trooper material,
Mace observes mildly. Cody's still wearing his helmet, so Mace can't see his expression, but he definitely feels the sideways look that gets him.
I think you mean Jedi material, Cody says dryly.
He pauses and then asks,
will the temple even agree? We're adults, not kids. And General Skywalker said he almost wasn't accepted because of his age.
Mace doesn't answer for a moment. The memory aches because it was his last glimpse of Qui-Gon's defiance. But he wonders, sometimes, if Qui-Gon would be alive if Mace had bent, had pushed for them to accept Anakin immediately.
Anakin was denied entrance to the temple at first, yes, he says after a long beat. However, it wasn't solely because of his age. He denied his feelings rather than face and accept them as Jedi do, as Jedi must. It concerned us.
Must? Cody asks, and Mace lets out a quietly rueful breath.
We sense the emotions of entire planets, Cody, he says. Imprints of battlefields and old tragedies can cripple us even centuries later. A Jedi has to be able to work through emotions and release them, and Anakin has never made a habit of such things.
There's a hesitation, and then Cody sighs.
He really hasn't,
he agrees wryly. Slinging his blaster over his back, he eyes the edge of the cliff, then asks,
me next, I assume?
He doesn't sound overly enthusiastic about it, and Mace considers him for a long moment.
I can carry you with me, if you would like,
he offers. Cody's breath of relief is very obvious over the speakers.
If you wouldn't mind, I think I'd much prefer that.
Mace inclines his head, stepping forward. In the armor, Cody is a good handful of inches taller and quite a bit bulkier, but Mace loops an arm around his waist, checks that their landing place is clear, and says,
put your arm over my shoulders. Move with me.
Cody's arm curls over the back of his neck, and he grips tightly as Mace takes two steps. At the very edge of the cliff, he sucks in a breath, and Mace pauses.
You won't fall, he says quietly.
I know that, Cody says, dry. But usually I've got at least some rappelling gear between me and a drop like this.
This time, Mace says, you have a Jedi.
When he takes another step, Cody moves with him, and Mace leaps lightly from the edge. There's a sharp breath in his ear, a hand fisting his tunic, but Mace doesn't react, just slows their fall until it's perfectly controlled. The ground closes, but not at any speed as to be dangerous, and Mace drops them onto a clear patch of boggy ground with a soft thump. For a long moment, Cody doesn't move. Then, carefully, he releases Mace's tunic and snorts.
If that's what it's always like when you throw yourself off things, I can see why it's a Jedi habit, he says, and straightens. Coruscant, Mace says blandly, is the perfect place for learning as well.
Cody pauses, like he's imagining bunches of younglings going out in droves to throw themselves from high places, which is entirely untrue. Mace only went out with other Padawans. Younglings have a hard time getting passes out into the city.
Jedi,
Cody finally says, exasperation and amusement in equal measure in his voice. Mace doesn't bother arguing. He steps away, scanning the ground around them, and it's only mildly comforting to be out of the tight confines of the forest. The increased visibility here weighs against the knowledge of what's waiting for them and comes up wanting.
There are more Vornskers,
Anakin says behind him, And when Mace turns to look at him, he tips his head toward the north. Up there, I can feel them. Mace closes his eyes, reaching out, and just barely brushes jagged, hungry mines, dark and devouring. Residences, he says, and opens his eyes again, unsettled by the number of Vornskers. They were likely kept as guards once. The Sith of the Dark Council would have been happy enough to set them on members of their own kind. Anakin grimaces, fingers curling around the hilt of his lightsaber. And now their ghosts are probably going to set them on us, he says.
Not precisely.
Mace judges the closest edge of the ruined city, the road almost entirely sunk into the soft ground.
Sith don't leave Force ghosts the way Jedi do. There's no higher understanding of the light side that they channel. All they can be are imprints of rage and malice, caught in the real world.
He glances back at Anakin, seeing the consideration on his face, and asks,
It's a great irony, isn't it? The Sith seek immortality, but in seeking it, they lose all chances of finding it. Force ghosts only manifest from selfless intentions.
Immortality? Fives asks, and flicks a wary glance at the city. Is that their whole thing? Mace inclines his head.
It's the reason they turned to the dark side to begin with, he says. Greed and rage and pain. But such things twist the Force, and nothing good comes of it.
Anakin looks away. Aren't there other reasons to go looking for immortality? He asks, and his voice is harsh. Maybe they wanted to save someone.
At the cost of thousands of other lives?
Mace asks, and remembers Obi-Wan's words in the temple about his worry for Anakin. Remembers Anakin's face during their wedding, when he and Cody made it clear that duty came first. There's a thread there, something alarming, and Mace doesn't care for the form it's taking.
Anakin, he says quietly, the power of the dark side takes. It corrupts. It might save a life, but it will bleed that life from innocence, younglings or sacrifices or anyone the Sith can reach. You've seen the chrysalids. Do you think anything else touched by Sith power changes for the better?
What if that one person is someone important, though? Anakin protests. Like the Chancellor or Cody. Wouldn't you want to save them? I'd rather die, Cody says, without so much as a hesitation. If you were going to kill innocent people to save me, I'd rather go out right then and there. And if you went through with it, I'd hate you for it. Even if you were killing enemies. That's not the kind of thing people can accept, General. Anakin looks away from Cody to Mace, and his expression is still tight, unhappy. Mace can feel the stirrings of something dark under the surface. One sharp flicker that reads, regret, 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 I did something terrible. And then it's gone, tamped back into Anakin's usual vast but steady power. And Mace can't catch so much as a hint of it. Come on, Anakin says, turning away. At least the Citadel's gonna be easy to find. For a moment, Mace can't pick his words. Watches, narrowly, as Anakin walks away, and...
What'd you say about denying emotions?
Cody murmurs beside him, sounding faintly concerned. Silently, Mace inclines his head, considers... carefully, Anakin's reaction, and then thinks of Harun Kal, his choice in the jungle, lowering his lightsaber even when Depa had every intention of killing him, rather than so much as waver in his hold against the darkness. He wonders, abruptly, what Anakin's reaction to Vapod would be. Would it serve as a timely warning, or a foothold for the dark side?
This planet, he says quietly. Grimly, may have a poor effect on Anakin.
The tilt of Cody's helmet is thoughtful.
What about you?
He asks. Mace isn't arrogant enough to say he'll be fine. Pauses, turning the question over, weighing it against his sense of self, and then breathes out,
I believe, he says finally, that I will not give in to the dark side, regardless of outside factors.
He can feel Cody's gaze on him, heavy.
Because he won't be tempted, or because you die before you do? Mace doesn't answer, but that's likely answer enough. Anakin is getting too far ahead, he says instead, and follows the disappearing figure into the moss and grass-covered ruins. There are quick steps behind him. Not the careful placement of Cody's, but more careless, less deliberate. A moment later, Fives falls in behind him, and then hesitates like he wants to say something. Mace turns his head, checking that Cody and Kix are bringing up the rear, close enough that he can guard them easily if he needs to, and then raises a brow at Fives in silent question. Sorry, sir, Fives says, faintly sheepish. The Sith had a whole empire, and this was part of it? Yes, Mace answers, sighs, rueful, and says, until 10 years ago, the Jedi considered the Sith extinct. But once, their empire was just as powerful as the Republic. Ahead of them, the dark citadel looms, lit by flickers of lightning, and Mace grimaces. If this planet was the home of the Emperor, there are very few options for its identity.
You know where we are? Kix asks, surprised.
Mace shakes his head. Not entirely. Not yet. But there are only a handful of options if this was a seat of Imperial power.
He ducks under a drooping tree, its roots anchored in crumbling duracrete, and glances up at the dark sky. The Citadel likely has a hangar. The ships within it are old, but maybe there's a chance they can get one spaceworthy again. He would rather not leave their rescue to the chance that someone can fly through the caldera twice.
Is that what Dooku's trying to do? Cody asks. Dark.
Rebuild a Sith Empire?
Potentially, Mace allows after a moment. However, I believe Dooku is truly convinced that the Separatist cause is a good one, and it's hard to blame him for that, even if he's done terrible things in the name of it. But whatever master he serves is likely one of the old Sith, seeking the downfall of the Jedi and the return of power for his kind.
Griff! Fives mutters, unhappy. Because one war wasn't bad enough. This is like two or three stacked on top of each other.
Indeed, Mace agrees dryly. A waterfall where the road used to be forces a detour, since the clones can't leap it as easily as a Jedi. And he picks his way across the broken pieces of a tall obelisk, the black stone seeming to swallow the dim light entirely. Anakin is ahead of them, tucked back underneath the overhang of a building that's been overrun by trees and fungus, and poking at an old control pad set into a wall. As Mace approaches, he glances up and grins, clearly ignoring his own outburst from moments ago. Look, he says, jabbing at a button. There's a faint flicker of blue light that dies away again a moment later, and Anakin looks victorious. There's still power, and if a place that looks like this can still manage that much, I bet we'll be able to find something useful in the Citadel. Many things, I'm sure, Mace allows, and doesn't push. He'll let Anakin stew for a while, or pretend not to think about things, and then drag him into meditating later. It's a technique that served him well when Depa was at her most recalcitrant, caught up in the horrors of being a teenager. For all that Anakin is older, Mace suspects it will work on him as well. Anakin pauses, frowning.
You think it's going to be dangerous? He asks.
It's been 1,000 years, Master. The Sith may not have achieved immortality, but I'm sure their booby traps come close, Mace says. And beyond that, the Sith Emperors were fond of terrible punishments and used Sith alchemy freely.
Chrysalid rancors? Anakin asks, resigned.
I have a very bad feeling that they will be the least of it, Mace says,
And not just for the way Anakin blanches.
Karking fantastic,
Anakin mutters, but he falls into step as Mace turns back towards the Citadel. Cody, waiting at the edge of the building, tilts his head, and Mace gives him a wordless nod as he passes. Things aren't quite fine yet, but they're tolerable. Obi-Wan was right to be worried, Mace thinks. There's anger in Anakin, and he's strangling it, pushing it down, not dealing with it. Sometime in the very near future, it's going to explode, and then they'll all have to live with the fallout. Unless, of course, something can be done to help him face it. Figuring out how to address it, though, while stranded on a hostile planet with Mace as someone Anakin has never cared for, that's going to be a job and a half. And Mace isn't looking forward to it in the least. Have you slept at all? Rex asks Obi-Wan, judgmental even as he passes over a cup of calf. Have you? Obi-Wan retorts. And he hates calf, but he takes the cup anyway, brain fuzzy with exhaustion. Any word on that ship? Rex shakes his head, and Obi-Wan can see far too many lines in his face that weren't there 2 days ago. Not yet. One of the engineers said the plating broke during the stress test, so they need to try with a different alloy. And even that might not get them through the caldera, or back again, which is the trickier part. Obi-Wan grimaces, setting the cup aside to rub his hands over his face. I can't feel Anakin, he says, a confession he wouldn't make except to Rex, except like this, alone in the darkness of his room. I can't feel him anywhere. We'll find them, Rex says quietly, steadily, and hesitates, then deliberately reaches out, pressing a bare hand on the back of Obi-Wan's neck. They're still out there. Because it's not just Obi-Wan's student and commander and friend lost right now. It's Rex's general, his men, his best friend. Obi-Wan sighs, then forces himself up straight and shakes his head. Of course they are, he says. A nebula isn't the worst barrier we've faced or overcome. Before Rex can answer, Obi-Wan's calm chirps. Instantly, Obi-Wan reaches for it, where it's lying on the corner of the desk, accepting the transmission, and says, Yes? General, a clone says, concerned. There's a ship docking and the pilot is looking for you, sir. For me? Obi-Wan raises a brow, casting a look at Rex, who seems equally startled. May I ask who it is? Commander Gray, sir. Gray, Obi-Wan echoes, frowning. He generally remembers every clone he encounters, but the name doesn't ring a bell. He glances at Rex again, who shrugs, and says, I'll be right down. Thank you. Maybe someone from command? Rex asks with a frown of his own. Or a new batch of shinies, Obi-Wan allows, though he's doubtful they would be sent all the way out to the edge of the Outer Rim. He rises quickly, collecting his lightsaber and fitting his comm over his arm, and asks, Shall we? If it's another disaster, I'm running away and joining a band of pirates, Rex says wryly. But he gets the door for Obi-Wan and follows him out, down two decks and out into the hall beyond the main hangar. The craft has already landed, sleek and gray and only faintly scorched, and Obi-Wan looks for a battalion symbol. Footsteps ring out on the ramp just as he catches the edge of a familiar presence, and he takes a sharp step back and curses. Sir? Rex demands, alarmed and already reaching for his blaster. It's Depa, Obi-Wan says, with a fair amount of dread. Depa Bilaba is nothing to sneeze at. She adores her master. Mace disappeared alongside Obi-Wan's former Padawan, and he's absolutely sure that even having been fighting a war at the time won't be enough to save him, in the face of that. You don't have to use that tone, you know, Depa says, amused. And a moment later, she appears around the side of the ship,
ducking beneath the wing and straightening. Her eyes are sharp, and for all her mouth is tight, she looks the way she always does as she approaches. Obi-Wan flicks a glance at the Padawan following at her heels, the clone commander behind them, and steels himself.
"Master Bilaba," he says, "you felt it?"
"Of course I did," Depa says, not ungently, and reaches out. Her long, warm fingers close over Obi-Wan's, and she says,
"You look as though I'm about to yell at you, Obi-Wan. How long has it been since you slept?"
"Too long," Rex says, very unhelpfully, from behind Obi-Wan's shoulder. Obi-Wan gives him an offended look, but doesn't pull his hands away from Depa's grip.
"We have a whole team of engineers trying to outfit a ship so it will survive the caldera," he says, maybe a little too quickly. "As soon as they have it, I plan to go myself."
"You what?" Rex demands, and Obi-Wan restrains with a wince.
Well, maybe he'd forgotten to mention that part.
"And I'll be with you," Depa says, warm but unwavering. "Obi-Wan, you aren't alone in this. Master Mace and Anakin and their troops will survive until we reach them. I know it." Depa's presence is light and warm and golden things, and Obi-Wan lets its kindness settle him, eases the cracks that have started to show through. Rex has been his anchor since Anakin vanished, but Rex is missing people too, and it's not fair to put everything on him.
"Force, Depa," he says ruefully, and closes his eyes. "I'm so glad to see you."
Depa pulls him into a hug without hesitation, tight enough to ground him.
"When we find that Padawan of yours," she says into his ear, "I'm going to dye him green from head to toe. Hopefully that will remind him not to rush into dangerous nebulas from now on."
Rex laughs, startled, and Obi-Wan can't help a smile either.
"I'll hold him down for you," he promises, and he lets himself lean on Depa for one more moment before he pulls back and releases her. "Ahsoka can likely be convinced to play bait, too."
"It's a plan, then." Depa's smile contains exactly as much mischief as he remembers from his days as a Padawan, tagging along behind the older girl despite the fear that thinking of her master inspired. Depa never seemed to think Mace was even slightly intimidating, and Obi-Wan's always admired her nerve.
"Assuming someone hasn't already killed him," Obi-Wan allows after a moment.
"General Skywalker can run fast," is Rex's opinion. "I'm sure he'll be fine."
"Mace?"
Obi-Wan asks, raising his brows as he catches the edges of that image. As hilarious as it is, it's also entirely incorrect.
"Oh no, my dear Captain. I meant Cody."
Rex pauses, digesting that. "Well," he says after a moment, "if Cody did shoot the general, I'm pretty sure he'd just aim to wound."
"Probably."
Obi-Wan has had too much experience with Anakin being insufferable in unpleasant situations to have that much hope, but he lets Rex keep his illusions.